Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written to Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring Black girls who aren't all that nice, and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by Black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a Black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. And today, you guys, I have Dana L. Davis joining me for this episode of the Written to Melanin podcast. She is an author, actress, and voiceover artist who lives and works in Los Angeles. She has starred in Heroes, Coach Carter, Franklin and Bash, Veronica Mars, and countless other films and TV productions. A few of her animation credits include Star vs. the Forces of Evil, Craig of the Creek, and She-Ra and the Princess of Power. Dana is a classically trained violinist and the founder of the LA-based nonprofit Culture for Kids LA, which provides inner-city children with free tickets and transportation to attend performing art shows around LA County. And she's joining me today to discuss her upcoming release, Fake Famous, and share with us some of her experiences writing young adult fiction and being a creative with multiple talents. That is a mouthful, and welcome to the podcast.
Yay, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. So this is cool for me. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you here. And before we get into this, for the people who are watching this who are familiar with me, I just want to start by saying that I have started reading Fake Famous, and I am about 15% of the way through it, and I absolutely love it so far. And I was just literally telling my husband, and I was like, I actually like laughed out loud. Like, I didn't just write LOL and be like, oh, that's funny. No, I literally chuckled while reading it, and I was just like, oh, this is fun. I'm having a good time.
First of all, you have a husband. You look like you're 19 years old. So,
thank you so much. I actually just had my 29th birthday a couple weeks ago. Well, so
they say black don't crack, so that's what it is. You look good, girl.
Thank you. You do too. Like, I love the hat. I love the fashion. I love all of it. I'm extremely excited for this interview. Like, honestly.
Yeah, I just turned 45, so I'm feeling I'm going through that phase where I'm like, oh gosh. So
No way. You do not look 45 at all. I would have pitched you mid-30s at best.
Oh, thank you. My daughter says that all the time, and I go, don't you mean mid-20s, honey? And she's like, no, Mom, stop.
I feel like it's different for children because it's like, I know how old you are because I know how old I am. And like, logically. But that being said, just so you know, if you guys are listening to the podcast and not watching this on the YouTube channel, we look great. Just so you know. But that being what it is, let's go ahead and kind of get into this. So you have a lot of hats, and we're going to try to cover all of them. But let's start with the most recent one, which is your upcoming Fake Famous, which is a young adult novel about basically two girls switching places. Like,
yes,
I have. Okay, we're going to let you talk about it, and then we're going to talk about it together. Go ahead. Tell our audience what it's about.
So Fake Famous basically is a story of this young girl. Her name is Red Morgan, and she's a farm girl. Like, she lives in Iowa. She's raised on a farm. She comes from like a lineage of farmers, and that's sort of where she's happy. And she comes from a really big family. She's got how many sisters? She's got two sisters, two brothers, and she's the oldest. So she kind of takes care of the family. She helps on the farm. But she bears this resemblance to a superstar whose name is Zay Zay Waters. And it just so happens that Zay Zay Waters, when this story begins, changes her hair to look like Red. Like, Red has this wild red curly hair. Mm-hmm. And so Zay Zay sort of changes her hair. And then Red falls into like this pile of manure on the farm and ends up like pretending to be Zay Zay Waters. The video goes viral. And that sort of sets her on her journey where Zay Zay kind of shows up and is like, hey, I want you to stand in for me. And so that's sort of like what the story is all about. Red goes on this journey, you know, as Zay Zay Waters.
And I just want you guys to know, if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you haven't picked it up yet because it doesn't come out until November 7th, correct?
Yes.
So I'm going to be honest with you. When I first heard about it, I was like, don't know about this, homie. I was like, wait a second. They're switching? How is this going to work? But then as I started reading it, like, I really just want to give you your flowers because I'm not gonna lie, I was skeptical going into it. But then as I started reading, one, you have a very like fun type of writing style where Red has just this personality where you're immediately like, oh, I like her. She's fun. And like, she has this immediate like teenagerness to her where it's like, yes, she's the oldest. Yes, she's responsible. But there's also like a, I'm going to do this and I'm not thinking this through, like standing on top of a railing in front of a pile of fresh manure. I don't know, mate. Maybe think that through. Think that one through a little bit more. But as she's going through this and the way you set up how these two people come to meet, it's just kind of like, oh, this is actually one, like relevant to like how the situation actually comes about to like, I'll say contemporary, modern, because I think one of the things with books, especially when it comes to writing them, people be like, oh, don't date yourself. Don't include certain things or whatever. But you did not shy away from it. I loved it. I had fun. I was literally cackling. I had to take a moment when her mom was hugging her and being like, you've got this. Go be free. Live your life. I was like, ah, feelings. Okay. But it's been great, and I'm so excited to finish reading it. So
thank you. And thank you for saying that Red feels likable, because I work really hard as an author. Because, you know, I write a lot of YA where the characters have so much angst mm-hmm. that they're not really likable. You want to go on this journey, like, you know, with this person. So I work really hard so that my characters are relatable. So thank you. That makes me feel good.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, I'll say the melanin fam talks about a lot in our Discord server is, you know, how sometimes with books, especially with young adult, you know, it gets so far from who it's supposed to be for. Like, the teenagers don't really feel like teenagers. They feel like adults trapped in teenaged bodies sometimes. And I've been a little hesitant with young adult lately, specifically contemporary, right? Because this is technically contemporary, right? I get my genres mixed up.
Yeah.
I get my genres mixed up sometimes, but I'm like, it's definitely not a horror. It's not a fantasy. I know it's not those two things. But getting into it, it's like, no, she feels like a teenager, like, especially in the beginning. And I'm not spoiling anyone because this is literally like kind of the premise of the book. But like you mentioned, she's the oldest and she's got four younger siblings and she is literally the glue keeping her family farm running, and she's got all these responsibilities. It's like, yeah, she's the oldest sibling, and not only the oldest sibling, but the oldest daughter, and the oldest daughter in a Black family. And, you know, there's tons of, I don't say research, but conversations about like, oh, that has significance, you know. And yeah. As she's like running around, there's this moment where she just really wants to go to this water park. She's like, this, I don't ask you for a lot, but I'm asking you for this. And the universe conspires, and it's just like, it's rough, but also it's like, on one hand, you get it. But then on the other hand, it's like, I hate that for you. I really do. I really, really do. And the fact that, you know, she's just lighthearted and singing, and she's like, yeah, I can sing, but like, whatever, it's not that big of a deal. And she's just
great. Exactly. Without being too hard on herself, because I feel like that's what YA characters do too. It's like, they hate themselves. They think they're not talented or good enough. But Red knows she's talented. She knows she's good enough. But she's like, that's just, we have so many different parts of ourselves, right? And she's just like, that's a part of me, sure. But like, who I am is like, I'm a farmer, you know? And of course, she goes on a journey to discover, is she that? Because I mean, that's a whole other conversation. Like, who are we? Are we what other people think we should be? Or are we like who we really are? And of course, this is the journey that she goes on. But I think I work really hard to keep my characters young too. I mean, I write YA. And I once got a criticism from someone I was listening to. Actually, it was a podcast. And they were like, But it was my debut. And they said that the book felt juvenile to them. And I was like, wait a second. Thank you. That's a compliment. Like, I'm writing books for kids. So you're right. I think sometimes with YA, we forget who we're writing for. Like, we're writing for teenagers.
And I'm so glad that you said that, because again, the conversation is, oh, well, it's mostly adults. And it's like, okay, statistically, sure. Adults are the ones buying the books. Yeah. That adults have money. That's generally how capitalism works. But also it's just like the it's not about who's buying it necessarily, it's about the target. Who are these books supposed to be for? There's a reason why they're separated in the first place. Absolutely. And for me, at least, one of the things that I don't want to say I'm a harsh critic, but I will say that I'm hard to please sometimes when it comes to a book, because I'm like, if I pick up a young adult, I'm not looking for the world problems, the weight of the world to be on a character's shoulders. They're a child. And I really like the fact that, again, this introduction to the character, you know, first of all, the kids all seem like kids, first of all. And then second of all, you know, like I said, Red is having, like you said, she knows who she is. She's having fun, but there's this whimsy to her. But she also isn't one of those characters, and I'm not going to name names, but it's not like, oh, I didn't get into college, or I don't have any friends, or I don't have any hobbies, or I don't have a personality. My only personality is angst. And I'm like,
exactly.
Why are you interesting? I don't want to go on this journey with you. You were already annoying me from the first page. And Red is just like, no, it's like she's going to college. She knows what she's going to major in. She's got friends that she wanted to go hang out with, and she couldn't because she's got a family who she actually talks to, like they're like they've lived together. And that, I'm going on a rant on a tangent, and this is not about me.
And her parents are together. They're happily married, and you know,
and they're black.
She likes her life. Exactly. She likes her life, and I think that we can start from there. Like, we can start stories from there where a person has an idea of who they are and what they want out of life. Absolutely. So I think those are much more interesting personally. So, yeah.
I mean, I agree. There's, especially within YA, I feel like there's definitely a space for it where it's just like, everybody's life is not falling apart before we go on the journey. It's just not realistic.
Exactly. And I mean, honestly, that's what I wanted to point out in this story, because I feel like a lot of times, especially with social media, we romanticize a person's life to be like, that's the life I should be living. My life actually is kind of crappy. And I kind of wanted to point out that, like, from the perspective, like, their two lives are very similar. You know, they have issues, they have problems, but they're both like managing their life and functional and have friends and family. And it's very similar, the life that they're living. And I just kind of wanted to highlight that the life that we're living is worthwhile and important. Not necessarily do we have to look at somebody else's life and be like, okay, see, that's what I should be doing, you know? Mm-hmm. I wanted to highlight the beauty in each experience.
And I am excited to continue reading it, because I have just gotten to the part where the exchange is happening, I'll say. And Zay Zay has showed up. She's met her mom. Her mom had a freak out. I died, because her mom was like, what is happening? That was hilarious. And I'm excited for it. But I'm not going to sit here in this whole podcast. It's not going to be me raving about how much I'm enjoying this book so far. But I did want to make it known, because, like I said, for those who know me, they know that, one, I don't read a whole lot of books, in the sense of I don't get on the internet and talk about a lot of things, because I am quick to not finish things past, like, 4% is, like, my golden rule. Like, that after about 4%, either I'm in it or I'm not. And you've passed that mark. So I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to go back and finish this one. So that being said, if you're listening to this and you do read a young adult, I highly recommend that you give Fake Famous a try. Go look into it. See if it's going to tweak. What was I gonna say? I don't know. If it's gonna scratch that itch, if it's gonna be what you're looking for, if it's gonna be the thing that you're looking to read, there will be a link wherever the links are, wherever you're watching this at. That being said, let's move on. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, what drew you to writing young adult fiction in the first place? Because that's also something that I'm always curious about. Like, we are all adults. What drives us to write about these teenagers sometimes?
That's such a good question. I'm an actor, so I mean, I'm a writer too, but I started acting and doing theater when I was 7 years old. Oh, wow. And maybe I had, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I wasn't aware of what the world was really like. I feel like I have talent. This is my gift. This is my passion. I love art. When I was 16, I came out to do a college tour in Los Angeles, because I knew I was moving to LA. When I was 18, I got accepted to Loyola Marymount University. I came out and I was just like, all right, let's do this. I'm going to be an actor. And then, what hit me was that, because, you know, I started acting professionally in 1998. Mm-hmm. So what I wasn't aware of was the issues in Hollywood. Like, I didn't understand the issues with Black actors. Now, we've come a long way because it's 2023 now. So I started acting in 99. So it was a different Hollywood. So when I started acting, there was not a lot available for me. You know, I was constantly auditioning to be like the sidekick, the best friend of the best friend. And oftentimes, like, the roles were very stereotypical. Mm-hmm. And they weren't really like, I felt like they weren't really representative of like the Black girls that I knew. Mm-hmm. And also the Black girl that I was, you know, because I grew up in Iowa. I'm from Iowa. I'm a big old nerd who listened to like Les Mis when I was a kid. My role models were like Colm Wilkinson, who like played Jean Valjean in Les Mis. Like, I was as nerdy as you can get, you know. Like, I had a viola that I carried to school, and like I was in show choir, went to Allstate. And so then I come to Hollywood, and this is like, I'm the machinist, right? Who I'm in charge of my instrument, and my instrument is like Iowa Broadway show tunes and like super geek. And then Hollywood's like, oh no, we need you to be like from Brooklyn. We need you to like be hood. We need you to be
edgy, the monolith,
ghetto, whatever their word is. That, and I would go into rooms literally, and casting and directors would be like, can you do it again? But can you be like a little bit more sassy? And it just wasn't like in my repertoire. Like, I was like, I told my mom, I was like, Mom, you ruined my career because you raised me in Iowa.
How dare you raise me right, mother?
And so, I mean, there's just so many actors that, like, if they're looking for a Brooklyn girl, they're going to find her. Like, I can go in there and pretend to be a Brooklyn girl and pretend to be edgy, which, again, those stories can be interesting. And I love those stories, too. It's just that I felt displaced. And it was year after year after year of just feeling like really, really frustrated. So I feel like my desire to write came from like me being like, okay, I've had it. And I feel like we need to write more stories that normalize like the Black experience. Like, how can we just be arguing with our parents or arguing with our siblings or falling in love or, you know, auditioning for Broadway? I mean, one of my books is called Romeo and Juliet, and it's a retelling of Romeo and Juliet. And the lead girl is playing, you know, Juliet. And so that's basically how I sort of veered into writing YA. I was always close to like kid stories because I play a kid until I was 33. So I was playing a teenager on TV until I was like 33. I think I even played a teenager later in life because I do video games too. Mm-hmm. So I think when I was like 37, I think I played like a 14-year-old for a video game.
That's crazy.
So I've just always been close to like kid stories. And so I felt like, what's the best way to start as far as like putting more stories out where we're normalizing the Black experience, where Black girls are just getting a chance to fall in love and be silly and, you know, whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I started with YA, and that's how I sort of started writing books.
There's so much in there that I want to touch on because I'm just like, yeah, so much of it is exactly what, you know, we as like readers, but, you know, also authors and also just consumers of media talk about so much, especially when it comes to a lot of the material, I'll say, that has been given to us post 2020. It's like, okay, we hear the stories about the trauma and overcoming it. And there are some aspects like, yes, y'all are getting it right. Like, please talk about their hair and actually give them descriptions for what they look like and what their skin color is like. But also, it's been very one note in a lot of these stories about, you know, what type of story it is. And if you listen to this podcast or if you watch me on YouTube, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So we're not going to name the name, but we know what it is, right? And it's just kind of like, that becomes exhausting, right? It becomes exhausting to be presented in one way and being like, hey, this is your box. You fit into it or you do not apply. And it's just kind of like, that's not the reality. And it's always very interesting because, you know, some people will be very loud about being like, Black people are not a monolith. And then the stories that we get continue to perpetuate this idea that we are, in fact, a monolith. Everybody has the exact same experience. And I like how even in the beginning, you point out that even though, you know, Zay Zay and Red look alike, and they may even sound a little bit alike when they're singing, to the point where people might actually believe that, you know, Red is Zay Zay, when they meet, Red is immediately like, we are not alike. The way that she talks, the way that she carries herself, you know, even like obsessing over their fingernails. It's like, we are not the same. I'm very much a farm girl. And then she has a moment, you know, where she's talking to her brother as well, where she's like, he wants to leave. Like, he's like, 18, I am out, bruh, deuces. Y'all not gonna be able to find me. And she's like, I don't want to leave. Like, this is home. This is what I want. And I feel like that's also something where it's just like, there are black farmers, have been for a long time, you know? And it's just like, but Zay Zay, her personification is what people kind of see and what they expect for everyone. And it's just like, yes, there are people like that, but there are also people who are very much like Red and her family, who are, you know, they speak a different way, they talk a different way, they move through life a different way, and that's fine. And I wish we got more of that. So I'm excited for your book. I'm excited that there's going to be more representation, especially for a younger audience, where it's just like, no, you can be nerdy, you can be into show theater, you can be in the acapella group, you can be whatever it is that you want, and you can still live a fulfilling life and be presented from the very beginning as a whole and complete person who's not missing any parts. Because I think that's the thing that I really like the most about the book so far, is that Red is not being presented as if she's got missing parts. She's whole. She's complete. She does not need this opportunity from Zay Zay Waters to become Red Morgan. That's her last name, right? Morgan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, there are a lot of good things in this book where, and it's ironic, because, not ironic, maybe that's not the word I'm looking for, but it's one of those things where it's just like, if you read a lot or have paid attention, then you'll notice that a lot of what makes this book good is more so like what's not in it. And I love that, but that's just me. My two cents. I mean, it's been a highlight.
You said so many amazing things. I want to touch on so many things you said, but one of the things that you said that means so much, I feel like we're doing a whole lot better now. There's so many Black authors. There's so many amazing films out there that do a wonderful job of depicting Black people, the wide range of like who we are. But it wasn't always like that, you know? And, you know, when I was younger, I thought it wasn't okay to be me. I was like, I was embarrassed about who I was. And I think a lot of people, because we rely so heavily on like the media and the books and the movies to kind of form, sadly, who we are, who we think we are. That's a whole nother discussion. But like, people pick up on that, and they're really, when I was growing up, they were really hard on me. They were like, you're not a real person. I got called fake so much. I got called like, because they thought the way that I talked was like, not real. They thought the music that I liked wasn't, not, you don't actually like Broadway. You're just trying to like,
it'd be interesting.
Yeah, and it's like, why would I pretend to like to be this way? And so I would get embarrassed, and I would be so like in my shell, you know, because I thought like it wasn't okay to be me. I remember like the first movie I did was Coach Carter, and it was a predominantly Black film. So here I am in LA feeling scared because I'm that nerdy Black girl on a set with like all Black people. Totally afraid, like quiet, like mousy, like, oh my gosh, I don't want to say anything. And then I realized like, these people are wonderful. And like, I can be myself, and I can be like a big old nerd, and everyone's still going to like love me, you know, because of who I am, not because of what I like listening to. But I think it's important for people to write stories like this. Like I said, we're doing better. We're doing a whole lot better. It's not perfect. I cringe a little bit when I still see movies and I see the finger snapping, you know, girl. But I cringe a little bit if that's the only person I see on the screen. But if I see a wide range, if I see that girl, plus I see the other Black girl, then that makes me happy, because like, please represent us fully, because the white films do it. They have all different kinds of white people, because that's the way life is, or whatever race. We're all so very different. So we have to, it's important that we represent Black people as the varied and diverse group of people that we are. It's okay to be like the finger snapping girl, like those people are my family, for sure. But we also have to represent the other type of Black girl, so that she doesn't feel like, oh, it's not okay to be me. Like, it's so important. Like, I just want to reach out and hug that Black girl and be like, it's okay to be exactly who you are.
Absolutely. And again, that resonates so heavily with me, because I am the type of person where it's like, I okay, admittedly, I'm not into show show stuff, but I was very much the girl who was like, okay, I'm into books. I don't really like watching live television. I watch more cartoons and things of that nature. And it's just like the music that I listen to, I'm like, I feel like it was also, maybe it's just a me thing. Maybe it's just a me thing, and I will acknowledge that, right? But for me, it was also like just being, I don't want to say basic. Like, I wasn't the girl who was like, oh yeah, I get really deep into the deep cuts of like rap and house music and things like that. No, baby doll, I'm over here listening to Mariah Carey and Beyonce, okay? I am the most regular girl that you're going to get. And no, I don't keep up with what's happening. I remember one time one of my friends asking me about like Beyonce and Jay-Z, and I did not know that they had gotten married. And I was just like, okay. And she's like, that's her husband. I was like, okay. Am I supposed to just like know that through osmosis? Like, what? So it's just being able to be yourself fully and wholly. Because also what I like to do with my books, you know, not making this about me, but like the reason it resonates so heavily with me is because I'm kind of like on the opposite end of what you, not what you're trying to do, but like what you want, allowing Black girls to be themselves. Because my whole thing is like, I write books about Black girls who aren't all that nice. And it's about giving Black girls the freedom to fully be themselves without having to cater and shape themselves and mold themselves into being this version of themselves that's palatable and pleasing to other people who don't know them, aren't interested in knowing them, but they have to present themselves a certain way in order to feel comfortable and accepted, even if that's not who they really are, you know?
Yeah, I love that a lot.
And so when you were talking about that and also being on the set, like a predominantly Black set, I think one thing that's not really talked about enough within, you know, the Black community as a whole, but definitely within, you know, the entertainment aspect, whether that be reading, whether that be, you know, any type of podcast, video, whatever, is that feeling when you are, you know, I'll say grow up in an environment where you're not welcomed to share your full self. And then you get around other people and specifically Black people who don't know you, and you feel immediately like you judge yourself for being like, oh, I'm not Black enough. How do I present myself that they will accept me and not be like, oh, she's not one of us? It's like, no, like I want to be one of you guys. I am. But then it's also like, at the same time, I don't know if this was your experience, but it's also like, you know, you like show tunes, but also you're on a set in Hollywood. Those other people probably had similar interests or not so far divorced from your own. But we're just so taught that everything that we do is different if you're not what you see on TV. That was a rant.
No, I love that we're on the same page. And yeah, I just think it's important to have these discussions, if not just for that one little girl who's like, it's okay to be me. Yay. So yeah.
Please be you. Please. I am antagonistic. I don't think Dana is that person. She seems very nice. I encourage you to be the problem. Be the problem. Make them uncomfortable. Be your full self and live your best life. That is my advice. You're welcome.
And I love, you know, when I was younger, I played a character who was like the mean girl at school. And I had so much fun with that. And I loved that it was the Black girl who got to be a kind of a different character. Like you said, like you're working hard to write these characters. I was the antagonist on the show, and I had so much fun.
I love it. And that's the thing. I think sometimes there's this idea that we all in it together. Trust me, homie, when you are one of us, we are not all in this together. Okay? Some of them are mean for no reason. You're just like, girl, calm down. Yeah. Who upset you? Anyway. I had questions here to ask you, but I feel like we're having such a great conversation. So I'm going to deviate just a little bit. And I kind of really want to do your take on, since we are talking about young adult and also talking about the impact that it has on the reader, specifically young readers, you know, there are a lot of discussions that float around on the internet, specifically the book community on any platform, you know, take your pick, whichever one you like. And there's always a discussion happening. And 9 times out of 10, it's, you know, circling, you know, something happening in the young adult community. So I was just curious, like, how do you have any like hot takes or unpopular opinions about any of those discussions that be floating around? This is a safe space, I'm honest.
No, I try to, you know, I'm a Libra. I was born.
Me too.
When's your birthday?
October 14th. When's yours?
Happy birthday. Happy belated October 4th.
That's my brother's birthday. Happy belated.
Happy belated. That's great. Okay. So I tend to, it's not even act, but I can like, I'm such a balance. I see both sides to mm-hmm. situations, and I'm super like, you know, like even when my mom calls me and she's like, I have a, you know, she wants to rant. I'm like, well, mom, let's start this over.
Same problem. Same problem. Like, well, I don't know. Maybe they're not like fully wrong though. Like, do we consider that?
Exactly.
My mom, not what she wanted to hear.
She always calls my sister when she really wants somebody to just be on her side. She's like, I'm gonna call my older sister. So I tend to like, you know, to be like steer clear of those kinds of, you know, because I can see both sides. I can see all different, you know, ways we can go and think, and I try to just keep things neutral as much as possible.
That's fair. I understand that. I, on the internet at large, the public face, I'm very much like, I ain't in it. My name is Bennett and I ain't in it, right? But yeah.
And I call people thumb thugs. That's like my little, because people can easily be like at home with their little like mocha choca latte, comfort of their little, mm-hmm. you know, desk, and have lots of opinions about things, you know?
Keyboard warriors.
But at the end of the day, like artists who are creating, whatever you put out, you most likely put a lot of work into it. I mean, it takes me a year to write a book. It takes me a year to edit that book. So it's about 2 years per book. So whatever comes out of an artist's heart and mind, a lot went into it. So it's so easy to be like, I have an opinion about this. Really easy. What's hard is to create art. You know?
It is. And honestly, whenever that comes up, one of the things that always kind of sticks in my mind, it's a random line, but it's like from Eminem's Kamikaze album. Like one of the opening bars is like, oh, what's your talent? Critiquing my talent. Okay. Ooh. And it's just like,
love it. I love that. Yeah.
And it just kind of sits with me, especially, you know, when you are an author, because one of the pieces of advice is always like, don't read your reviews. Like once you release it, you know, it's for the readers and so on and so forth. I don't know if that's the same for like traditional publishing or not, but
yeah. You made me think of another Eminem line when he's like, what do I think of success? It sucks. Like, it comes with all these things, you know, like you put something out and everybody's like, oh, well, now I'm gonna talk about it, what you put out. Like,
it's definitely something that you have to prepare yourself for, because it comes with the territory no matter what type of art you're creating. But it's also one of those things where I think you have to be mindful that what people say, even if they present it in a negative light, doesn't always mean it's negative. It's kind of the same thing that you were saying earlier when they were like, oh, this book is juvenile. You're like, I wrote it for children, so thank you. Like, it's supposed to read, like it's meant for a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old to like read and understand and get it and laugh. And it wasn't for your 45-year-old self, so I'm sorry you didn't like it, right? Ooh, that was not a jab. I'm sorry. But sorry, I just realized what I said.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's fine. But you know what? Sometimes too, I think we can learn. I mean, I know it's hard, but sometimes I think we can learn from the criticism. I once had someone reach out to me a personal email, which, you know, I have a website, it's danaldavis.com, so people can email me. So a person reached out and expressed their concerns with some of the ways I depicted Jehovah's Witnesses in my first book. Because my main character goes and lives into a home where the family is Jehovah's Witness. And one of the issues she had was that I referred to Kingdom Hall as church. Now, I chose that because I felt like it was a more common term. And I just wanted to use like a more common. But in fact, her email prompted me to reach out to my publisher. And so for the paperback version, church was changed back to Kingdom Hall. So it's like, we can learn from these things. I was able to like thank that person. We can approach things in a way where like, can't we all just get along and like help each other grow? If we're not growing and learning and getting better, then like, why are we here?
Exactly. There's always space to learn from things, but sometimes you have to let things be what they are. Sometimes the criticism is just the book wasn't for them. Like
that too. And I have written back and been like, I'm sorry, my book didn't resonate. My suggestion would be just don't read my book.
She said, I suggest you go to a different restaurant if you're trying to eat somewhere. Thanks.
Yeah, because you do get, you know, people are, like I said, they're thumb thugs. People like to.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to sit down and write a story from start to finish that is complete. I'm not going to get into all the details of that, but, you know, you mentioned that it takes you 2 years to write your book. So I know a lot of the people who listen to the podcast are also like either authors or aspiring authors. And so I was just curious, like, what is your process like, you know, especially since you're on your fourth book? Well, fourth young adult. You have fourth and another one with the actress from Young and the Restless, right?
Yes, I wrote a memoir with Melanie Scott. Yeah. So what's my process?
Yeah, what's that like? That from start to finish. From I have an idea to, okay, here you go. Go ahead and read it.
Yeah. So I outline my books using Save the Cat, which is basically story beats, script story beats. So when you write a script, a lot of screenwriters use these story beats. I use the same story beats to write my books. And it basically goes through like a life journey, which is like, you know, you have like, you know, the dark night of the soul and the call to action, like all the story beats that we're, you know, used to. We just kind of like have memorized them and put them in order. And I start there with my story. I got a character. They have a want versus a need. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a catalyst that's going to propel them into their journey. There's going to be a B story, you know? So I feel like when you're watching a movie or reading a book, it's so easy to sort of pick out those story beats, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, you're an author as well. And I don't know if you do this, but I do it when I watch movies. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm, there's a catalyst.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. B story.
It's one of those things where it's just like, once you know it and you get familiar with it, it's almost impossible to turn it off, which is why, one of the reasons why when it comes to like reading books, I can be like a really difficult critic. Cause I'm like, for me, I'm like, I want that nice blend of, I can see it, but I'm not noticing it. I'm not like, oh, this is what this is. I still want to be caught in the story, but I also am like, in hindsight, once I take a breath, I should be able to be like, oh, this was this and this was that. Like, it's craft, it's technique of like knowing that this and this have to happen. But it's also skill and talent, and y'all still have to write the in-between parts, the connective piece. You still have to build out the story. You still have to be a storyteller. And for me, and this may be an unpopular opinion, if y'all don't like it, you know, that's fair. We all, it's a safe space. But for me, I feel like I have been running across a lot more people who are really good technical writers, who are really good with the craft of writing versus being a natural storyteller, which is why I was so excited about Fake Famous, because I'm like, this is the first book in a while, like fiction wise, where I've just been like, oh, I'm just reading this. And then I was like, oh, okay, I can see what these aspects of the story are that are like pushing it along and how we got here. But it's also why I'm like, I love how you did it, because it doesn't feel awkward, it doesn't feel forced, it doesn't feel plot convenient, if that makes sense. It feels like something that if these characters were real, this is a series of events that really just could have led to each other, you know? And I love that in a story. I want to be in it without thinking too much about it. I think the last book that really did that for me was like Delicious Monsters by Lizelle Sanberry. Like, that book still lives with me. Oh, and
beautiful.
Your book is, I can't say because I haven't finished it, but it's really there, because I'm like, I literally looked up and I was like, oh, it's like midnight. I should probably go to sleep. I got stuff to do tomorrow.
I love that. No, that makes me so happy, because you're right. You don't want to be beat over the head with the story beats, you know? You just want to get lost in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we love storytelling so much. That's why we love watching movies and reading books. But I have to tell you, I'm sort of obsessed with story. I'm obsessed with story. Even in my own journey, in my own life, I'm like, oh, this is my catalyst right here. Like, I'm always like, trying to like, you know, extract meaning from the things that we're going through.
I swear we are the same person. And it's terrifying.
I don't want to live in a world where things are random, right? That's just too like painful, even though sometimes you question it, because a lot of things that happen in the world are so terribly tragic, you know? So I just try to live in a world, at least in my experiences, where I'm like, why did this happen and how can I learn from it? And so that's what I try to do with my characters. Why is this happening? How can they learn from it? And how in this story can I maybe inspire the person who's reading it? That's sort of my purpose.
If you're listening to this podcast, I want you to know that that is like a really golden nugget for when it comes to writing and writing good stories, at least in my opinion, is... You can put whatever you want to into a character sheet. You can sit down and you can fill everything out, but ultimately it comes down to why. Why is this character doing this and what are they going to take from it? Because if you want to talk about growth, you can talk about development, you can talk about story arcs all day long. But the thing is, it's going to boil down what happened and what did they take from it and how are they going to move going forward. It all boils down to that. And if you can answer that, then you can develop a character. And it's going to be more compelling than if you can fill out a 50-page character sheet of like their favorite food, their favorite ice cream, what they did when they were on their third birthday. Cool, great, know those things. But like, yeah. Also, if they are faced with this challenge that you're about to put before them, if they're faced with someone famous who wants them to switch roles with them, what are they going to do? How are they going to react to it? And I feel like you have to know both sides. Like, what if they say no? What if they say yes? And if they are going to do something that's out of character, and this is something that I tell my coaching clients all the time, if you write a character who's going to do something that is outside of what they would normally do based off of who you've written into the story, there has to be a reason why they are acting out of character. Because people do things that they don't normally do. You just have to know why. And then you have to understand what they are going to take from it and how that's going to shape them going forward. Because the thing is, if you're going to have a character and they're not going to be the same at the end of the book that they are at the beginning, they have to have meaningful things happen to them. And I swear by that. I live by that. Because also, like you said, as a person, as a real person in real life, one of the things that I do is I definitely take a step back and I evaluate, like, okay, am I on the path, on the trajectory that I want to be on? Am I making decisions that are going to lead me to where I'm hoping to go? Like, no, I don't know the future, but I know that, hey, if I want to be a full-time author, and if I look at my last, 3 months, 2 months, a week, have I been making decisions that support that? Am I going that way? And if something happens, it's like, okay, how do I feel about this? Is this good? Do I like where we're going? And if it's not, it's like, okay, where are we going to go from here? What lesson am I taking from it? Because like, life is life. Everything that happens to you is not going to be, oh my God, this is so amazing. Instagram share. Everything's not going to be like that. Some things are going to be like, oh, this kind of sucks and I got to deal with this. But like, okay, but where are we going to go from here? Is it going to make you a better person, a worse person? And are you okay with that? It's okay. And oh, sorry, slight rant. But it's okay if something happens to you and you decide that you no longer want to be as nice, friendly, open, sweet, whatever, as you were before, because you were like, you know what? The thing I'm taking from this is my own peace of mind, and my own peace of mind is going to cost other people their comfort. It is okay to make that exchange. But that is my life lesson for today. Do with it what you want. Also, I want to point out that, like I said, there's a live audience for this recording. And my husband's in the comments. He's like, I can confirm that you guys are scary similar in some way.
Now I want to read your books, though, because it sounds like you know a lot about storytelling. And like, you're saying the same things I would say. So like, I want to read your books now.
Thank you. I'd be happy to send you one. You sent me yours, so I'll send you mine. Just so we can talk about it. Yeah, that being said, I do have a couple other questions for you that I want to touch on before this episode gets like way too long. But let's talk about some of the other hats that you wear, because you're an actress, you're a voice actress, you have started a nonprofit. Like, you are doing a lot of the things. So like, how do you balance all of that along with like having a whole life outside of creating for other people?
Oh, I've always been a very driven person. I always say, I think sometimes we come to this planet like who we are, like we're like fully formed spiritual beings. We just have to go through the whole baby stage and all that. But when I was 10, I used to read the Chicago, because we lived about 2.5 hours outside of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I used to read Chicago newspapers and be like, Mom, there's an audition here. Like, can you drive me? And like I said, when I was 16, I literally took the bus. I took the Greyhound bus to Los Angeles so I could do a college tour. I'll never forget. That was like the scariest thing ever. But I've always just been I always want to do so much. Like, I wish we all got to live to be like 250 instead of like, the 70, 80, 90 years we get, because I feel like there's just so much to do here and I just want to do it all. When my daughter was younger, I used to wake up at 5 to write before she did. So I would write from like 5 to 7, and then I would get her up, get her ready to school, drop her off, write some more in between those times, do my auditions. Then I remember one time I had an audition and they were running a little bit late, and I had to go pick up my daughter from school. She was three at the time. She was four. She was in preschool. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting, looking at the clock, like, do I leave this audition to go get my kid? Like, I have so much going on. So I get into the audition finally and like burst into tears. Like literally like in front of the director and the casting director, and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I gotta go. My daughter is out of school right now. So yeah. It's just like wearing, like you said, wearing so many different hats and trying to navigate it all. It's really challenging. But at the end of the day, like, what else are we gonna do, right? Like sit around and watch Netflix all day? Like, no, we're gonna find things to do that inspire us, that uplift us, so that we can engage with the world around us, which mm-hmm. I feel like is really good advice too for people who wanna write, is just like live. Like if you can live authentically, like pursuing your passions and the things that genuinely make you happy, you'll be able to write like the most amazing characters.
I love that so much. Because literally I feel the same way on pretty much all of that. Like it's not about just picking something and then talking about it. Like, oh, I want to write a book about this. It's about living and seeing and experiencing. And it's like, okay, that fuels your creativity. Like that creative well, you have to refill it sometimes. And sometimes that's going out. Sometimes that is, yeah, sit on the couch, watch Netflix and like watch some stories. But also like you said, that experience of taking the Greyhound across the country to go look at colleges so you could be where you want to be. That is something that, and it's not just that event, but it's that emotion. So it's like when you need to write about a character doing something scary for the first time and really stepping outside of their boundaries, that is a feeling that you can write about a dozen times and every time it's going to look different. But if you never do anything that scares you or inspires you, then you are going to be like in this place of, I don't say stagnancy with your writing, but that's what it can feel like. Like, I don't know what to write about. I don't know what to do. It's just like, okay, well, what can you pull from? What have you experienced? Yeah. What have you lived? And if you haven't lived enough, then like, go live, go outside, touch a tree. Maybe not touch a tree, because I hate that advice, because the way I don't like trees and nature, that's not for me. But, you know,
writing from a perspective that's not necessarily authentic or realistic and it doesn't resonate with people. Like, for example, when I wrote Roman and Jewel, which is about Broadway, mm-hmm. I researched Broadway. I flew to New York and stayed for a week, and I interviewed Broadway stars. Mm-hmm. And like, I interviewed this one Broadway star who was like, he really was not happy like on the show. Like he gave me a perspective of like the realness of being in a Broadway show, getting off work at midnight every day. Mm-hmm. A lot of the subways are shut down. Getting home and then waking back up at like 6, exhausted, never seeing your family. Like, he presented that to me in such a way that I was like, I had such a romanticized idea mm-hmm. that like you're on Broadway and you're like living the dream. Like you're the cast of Hamilton and like everything's awesome. And it's not really like that, you know? And so I was able to add that element into my writing. So it's so much better to like authentically, like to pursue like what's really going on behind the scenes and all different things, you know, instead of just like what we think, the cookie cutter, like of being a star, like in my book, Fake Famous, it's like, oh, she's famous and she's rich mm-hmm. and she has a house in Malibu. So like, what else?
Everything should be fine. Yeah. Like what else do you want? Selfish? Gosh.
Exactly.
But no, like, honestly, it's that with everything. And it's one of the biggest things with, like, I think, for me, and it could be an unpopular opinion, but, like, truly, that I feel like separates a lot of, like, good writers from amazing writers is that the amazing writers are the ones who truly love it. Because as with every job, if you want to write full time, like, there are sacrifices that have to be made in order to accomplish that. Just like you talked about on the Broadway, it's like, and I think about, and maybe my reference is like Glee, because that's just what I grew up watching. But, you know, it's like, you have to want it that bad. You have to eat, sleep, breathe, live it. And it's like, if that's what you love, then when you get it, the work is going to feel worth it, because you're going to be doing something that you want to do. Like if you want to be a private chef, well, that means that you got to cook like 3 or 4 meals a day. And that means cooking a lot of recipes and messing them up and fine tuning them and doing it again and again. But if you love it, it's not going to feel like work. But if you have to do it and you're like, bruh, I just want to eat, it's going to feel a completely different way. And so when you take that same approach to writing and you're like, oh, I want to be a full-time writer, because you think, oh, I get to set my own hours and I can sleep late and I can write whenever I want and I can, you know, just wing it, essentially. It's like, cool, that is an option, but like also it's a job. You also have to, it's really hard. Let me tell y'all something. It's really hard to work for yourself and hold yourself accountable, especially if you've never had to do it before. If you have always had an outside source, being like, you have to go to school, you have to go to work, you have to do this, and you get that freedom will hit you like you ain't gotta do it. You could just sleep in. You don't have to get up and write. You don't have to do this research. You don't have to go to a seminar. You don't have to pay money to, you know, sit in on this workshop or see this person who's really good and to learn and get better. You ain't gotta do that. And so that's a whole other conversation that we're not gonna get into right now. But the point is, you have to truly, genuinely want it. Otherwise, it's going to feel like work. And that comes through. Like, the best way I can kind of articulate it, and you've probably seen this because you're actually in the industry, but it's like, if you see a movie or something and you can tell that the actors don't really like each other, they don't vibe, or they don't have good chemistry, that comes through no matter how talented they are. It's just like, there are some things that are inherent that people pick on. It's a vibe. And it's just like, if you ain't got the right vibe, it ain't gonna work. So if you're writing characters and you're just doing it because like, oh, I know the structure of writing, I can technically do this, but you don't want to do it, you don't love to do it, it's still not gonna hit the same as somebody who went into it with a wing and a prayer, was just like, I love these characters so much and I'm gonna just bang it out. Full of typos, full of mistakes, but full of love. They're still gonna, that's still gonna resonate with people in a different, completely different way. But that's another tangent.
No, I love that. Yeah, basically, new work. I love that.
Yeah. Also, let's see here. Ben said, you have to live life and pay attention to life in order to write stories that feel like the characters are living in the worlds you create rather than just existing for the plot. Let me tell you something. I'm going to say this and then we're going to move on. The way I cannot stand a book where it's like, it's so obvious that characters are doing things for plot convenience, I will yeet that book across the room. I cannot live like that. It's like, I don't want things happening just because plot. It, like I said with your book, it feels like it's happening. Like, these are a series of things that could have just led to this and not just, oh, she has to show up because the plot demands that she shows up at this time on this page at this point in the story. Even if that's how you went into it, that's not how it reads. And that's important. I'm going to leave that at that.
I'm with you 100%.
Okay. That being said, we are coming up on an hour, which is kind of crazy because this has gone by super quick. I do have a couple questions that I like to ask everyone who comes on the podcast. And that is, what writing advice would you give to any new authors who are just starting out on their journey?
What advice would I give? Well, just kind of what you were saying, like do the work. Don't be lazy. I've read some books where it's like the person just decided they wanted to have a book out. And that's fine. Like, you can have a book out, but that's kind of like, don't take shortcuts. Don't take the easy way out. Take the long route. Like, it's going to be hard. If it's not hard, then you're probably not doing it right. If somebody doesn't give you notes that says, yeah, no, then you're not doing it right. You need beta readers to tell you, like, look, this didn't resonate with me. This offended me. Like, your first draft should be an absolute like dumpster fire mess that you're going to give to your friends and family or whoever you can like sucker into reading a mess so that you can like make the necessary changes. Don't be afraid to like put in that work, to put in that blood, sweat and tears so that you have something that you can be proud of, because anybody can put out a book, right? Anybody can pick up a story. But like you said before, like, what is your purpose here? Like, what are we trying to do? What story are you trying to tell? What do you want this? Your character is obviously going to come out different, but how do you want the reader to come out different? So we just read a book and we toss it to the side and we're like, okay, that was good. Now I'm going to go to, you know, get a hamburger. It's like, no, you want your reader to be like, this book changed me. Because how many movies have we seen or books that we've read where we're like, I literally don't know what that movie was about. I can't remember. And I don't know what that book was about, but I read every page. Mm-hmm. It's like, we want to stir something in people where it stays with them. It makes an impact. It changes them. you want somebody who's racist to read a book and be like, I'm not racist anymore. I was wrong. Like, we're trying to like make change. That's why we tell stories. So that's my advice. Don't be lazy. Do the work. And I think that you'll love yourself for it. Like, take the time it takes.
I'm going to second that. And I'm going to say it again. Do the work. 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 And I will add to that, especially so if you are trying to be perceived as a professional within this industry, because there are people who do the work. Let me tell you that. And even though you may see the outside, you may see the finished product, you may see the put together, like, oh, I just, you know, just I banged out this whole book in like 3 months. Cool. That's their process. But you don't know what's happening behind the scenes. You don't know if to get it out in 3 months, that meant they were writing 12 hours a day, multiple days a week to get it done. You don't know how many revisions that went through, or let's be real here, even if it's true. So
that's so true. Because when you said that, I was like, is that Stephen King? Maybe Stephen King probably did it. But
the point is, it's just like, you everybody puts in the work in their own way, and just because it doesn't look like someone is putting in work doesn't mean that they aren't putting in work. So definitely put in the work. And then also, to kind of like echo what you said earlier, there's this quote, I don't know who said it, y'all know I suck at remembering names, so whatever, but it's something like, people will not remember what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And books are the same way. They may not remember the title of the book. They may not remember the author. They may not remember what it was about, but they will remember that one line or that one aspect of the story that made them feel something. And the way I know that is because if you look on any aspect of the book community, people will tell you, especially about a series that we don't talk about anymore, people will tell you like, oh, I loved this series growing up because it made me feel something. I connected to it. It got me through something that I needed to get through at a time that was difficult for me. And they will still talk about it even after the fact, even after they've moved on, even after it's been over a decade. People will still be like, this made me feel something. Or especially if you look at any reviewers who are like post-college and they're like, this is the book that got me back into reading. It may not have been great. It may not have even been wonderful. I may have gone back and read it and been like, what was I thinking? And they will still be like, it made me feel something in a time and a moment where I needed to feel it. And therefore, it has a very special place in my heart. For me, that book is Dread Nation by Justina Ireland. I have since read it and I'm just like, eh. But I love that book. I love it so much because I'm like, I love Jane. I loved what she represented and I loved what she gave me in a time when I did not have those things for myself. And it was, like you said, a catalyst moment where I was like, okay, I can't say that this is what I like to read, this is who I want to be, this is the traits that I want to have, and then not make decisions that reflect that, you know?
Absolutely. So, oh, I love that.
And Ben's like, I love how she immediately knew what series you were talking about. we're not gonna talk about it. We don't need to name it. If you know, you know. If you don't, congratulations, you don't need to know. Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. There's a line from The Color Purple, and I don't know if it was in the book, but I know in The Color Purple, when Miss Seeley says, you know, I'm poor, I'm black, I might even be ugly, but dear God, I'm here. Like, yep. That line, I'm here, like, became a song in the musical that, like, if you've ever, whoever's listening to this, go listen to anybody sing I'm Here, Fantasia.
I love Amber Riley's version.
Oh, I've not heard her version.
Oh, you have to hear it. It brings me to tears every time. Well, put tears in a corner, like thug tears. You know that one, like, this is beautiful.
The actress who originated it on Broadway, I think, Cynthia. I don't know how to pronounce her, like, Erivo.
Cynthia Erivo?
Yeah, she also played Harriet Tubman. She's amazing. She's
got an EGOT. Love her.
But her version, it's just, ugh. But yeah, it's just like, some moments in storytelling can last a lifetime. Don't you want a moment in storytelling that lasts a lifetime?
Yeah, like, I mean, truly. I mean, think about it. It's the fact that we're still talking about The Color Purple And The Color Purple came out before both of our generations. So it's just kind of like, it still resonates. There are still so many lines in both the movie and the play and the book. And if you have, I will say this, if you've seen the movie, you need to read the book because the book is amazing. It's a journey, but it's amazing. But yeah. So that being said, you guys, we are for sure going to wrap this up. So that being said, Dana, what is coming up next for you? Is there anything? Because I know Fake Famous is coming out. So are you just like coasting until it's out, or you have some things in the pipeline coming up?
I'm coasting. I'm actually working on a pilot, a series. So working on my screenwriting skills right now. We are on strike and an actor strike.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting time for a lot of people. Craig of the Creek, I've been on that series for five seasons, and we have a movie coming out. Craig of the Creek, the movie, is coming out. So that's, look forward to that next year. And there was an indie film that I did that's coming out soon. So just like little things here and there, and working on my series. I'm also working on a young adult, middle grade-esque, sort of a Goosebumps series that's a little bit paranormal, so a little bit sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the lab. This is my voiceover booth, by the way. I work a lot from home, so I have like my microphone here. You can't see it.
Gotcha.
But so yeah, I'm in the lab working.
Very, very, very cool. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I am a huge anime fan. So when I saw voiceover actress, I was like, okay. And I like geeked out just a little bit. But I'm excited for all of your upcoming projects. If you guys are listening to this, please go check out Fake Famous, especially if you read young adult, but also just if you are an author or writer and you're trying to figure out like, okay, what do these things look like? You talk about, okay, I want to be pulled into the storytelling. You talk about, you know, having reasons and having a why for your characters. If you want to know what that looks like, then pick up Fake Famous just from the craft aspect. I do recommend it. Like, at least for sure recommend the first 15% because I've read it and it's amazing. So.
Thank you so much.
So that being said, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs if they want to follow you, keep up with all that you're doing?
I am ITS Dana L. Davis on pretty much everything. I need to get better at social media. I'm trying. So it's Dana L. Davis on Instagram and TikTok, and my website is danaldavis.com.
Okay. And you guys know that there will be a link to the things and the places. So for sure, do the clicky clicking and the clicky places. So that being said, you guys, that is it for this episode of the Written and Melanin podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone that you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/writtenandmelanin, or grab a copy of my books, We Are the Origin and We Are Dying Gods, from my website, cmlockhart.com. If you'd like to support Dana, then please purchase her books, check out her movies, listen to her animation voiceovers, do whatever you need to do to get into the things, and follow her on social media. There are links in the show notes for everything, and thank you guys again so much for listening. Until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin.